think about the fact that you can't really grow and scale without these things in order. And if you do have the opportunity, or your business is successful and you start to have a lot of traffic and a lot of customers and more employees, and you're ready to grow and scale, and those things aren't in order, it only gets worse. And you can end up risking losing it all because your data, your numbers, your paperwork, your compliance is out of whack. And so it's really important to start while you're small with the habits and the routines of having operations and behind the scenes back office work done well.
This is the Girl Behind the Hustle podcast, and I'm Lucretia L.C. Thomas. Each week, I'm chatting with some incredible women across all industries and backgrounds who've agreed to tell the truth about what it really means to hustle. It's time for us to be honest, to let other women know that they aren't alone, to share our mountains and our valleys, to practice self-care, and celebrate our wins together. It's time to hear the truth from the women behind the hustle. This is the Girl Behind the Hustle, and I'm your host, Lucretia L.C. Thomas. Hey, girl friends, this is Lucretia. Thank you so much for tuning into the podcast this week. I hope you guys have been reading along with your book for the book club selection, Clap When You Land by Elizabeth Acevedo. We'll be discussing it in June. So if you're on our email list, which I hope you are, I'll be sending out more information on the discussion this week. If you're not, visit girlbehindthehustle.com to get signed up so you can get information regarding the book discussion. Tomorrow, Wednesday, is going to be Coffee Wednesdays. So as well, if you are on the email list, I hope you are, because we're going to be sponsoring coffee for you to pick up a free coffee. So hope you're on the email list, because we'll be sending those details out exclusively to our email list subscribers tomorrow morning. This week on the podcast, I am chatting with Makisha Booth. She is the founder of the first small business loan fund for Black women entrepreneurs in the nation, SistaBiz Loan Fund, which is part of the SistaBiz Global Network. The fund launched with $250,000 to provide equitable access to capital for a fast-growing, underfunded demographic of entrepreneurs. I absolutely love this idea, especially with everything going on, as we've seen with the PPE funding and just the lack of access in businesses that struggle to secure funds for their small businesses, and how some larger corporations came in and took those funds. And so this fund and SistaBiz Global Network is just a response to that. And it's something that has been set up by Makisha Booth and has existed for several years now. And what I really do love about the network is that not only are they providing funding to small businesses, but they're also offering affordable options for coaching, training, and services to help Black women build scalable, sellable businesses. So listen in as we chat about the importance of making sure your back end is in order, so that when opportunities arise for small business loans and funding, you can actually qualify for those. And also just making sure and looking at the things that we need to tighten up with our financials, and how to access additional capital for your business through a fund that she, in addition to the $250,000 fund that they already have, an additional fund that they created in response to COVID-19. Listen in. Hi, Makisha. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to talk to you and hear everything that you've been doing. I'm just really excited to get into it. Tell the listeners a little bit about who you are, for those who may not know you, and what your hustle is.
Sure. I'm Makisha Booth, and I am the founder and head business coach at SistaBiz Global Network. It's a nonprofit business accelerator designed to help Black women in business grow and scale their businesses. And I have been doing this work with SistaBiz for about 3 years, but my background over the past 20 years has been in everything from policy to education reform to small business. I worked for the SBA and ran my own day spa. And so I have 20 years of experience that kind of comes down to three sort of main skills that I'm currently leveraging right now. One is small business development. Two is curriculum design and adult learning. And And then three is policy and advocacy.
So you spoke a little bit about everything that you've done in your career journey, from co-founding the Denver Public Schools Innovation Lab, Imaginarium, politics and education reform, senior advisor to the Colorado State Senate president. Like you mentioned, you own and operate a Yaya Spa, which was featured in Black Enterprise. So during your time in all of these roles, was there anything that you experienced that led you to create Sisterpreneurs?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everything from the fact that I ran my own day spa and my own small business, and I was a micro business with no capital, bootstrapping for the most part. And that experience really showed me how hard it is to build a business and to build a business when you don't have the social or financial capital. And then my journey beyond that into politics and education really introduced me to, and my studies in indigenous political systems introduced me to really understanding racism and colorism and sexism in a heightened way, really understanding how those things are constructed and the layers and how they impact us. And so, of course, we all experience them as Black, most of us as Black women, we're experiencing those things every day. But just being in institutions where I had to fight my way through those things and educate myself on what was happening to me and how it was impacting my mind, body, spirit, and my dollar, my wallet, it made me passionate about helping other women understand and navigate those waters as well.
And you said you've been doing this for 3 years. Can we go back to what was the particular thing or moment that happened that kind of shifted you and made you pivot to doing this from leaving your corporate job that you had before?
Okay, so I have a couple of pivotal moments that I call out that when I look back, I feel like they were pivotal moments. The first was like when I wouldn't say hit rock bottom, but my version of hit rock bottom. I was working a full-time 9-to-5 job in a mainstream institution and was really stressed out, was enduring quite a bit. And I wasn't really a drinker, like I was a social drinker, but not someone who had to have a drink. I wasn't a daily drinker. And this story is hilarious and kind of keep it real. So just spoiler alert. And so I'm at my sister's house for like a barbecue or something. She made these really good cocktails, but I had to run. So I told her to put my drink in a cup so I could take it and drink the cocktail when I got home. And she put it in her daughter's sippy cup. Because we couldn't find a cup with the top. So I take it, I sit it in the side of my car door, forget it's there, like never drink it. And then you fast forward to like a week later, I'm in my office in a senior job, 6-figure position, and they were just driving me over the edge. And I was so angry, I couldn't tell you what the discussion or issue was, because that was years ago. But I was very, very angry to the point where I was like, let me leave this office before it gets real. Like, I was so angry that I left the building, and I had never done that before. And so I left the building and went and sat in my car. And I was so, so just like beside myself. And I looked to the side and the sippy cup was there. So I drank the sippy cup. I was like, it's time for me to leave this place. I was like, it is time for me to leave because y'all are taking me there. And I had gotten into this place where I gained weight, 20 pounds. And I was drinking. I had to have a drink every night. And one day I woke up and I didn't like who I was becoming. And mm-hmm. So eventually I ended up getting fired from that position. And all of the trauma stacked with me not taking care of myself, I kind of left there broken. And when I left there, I'm a type A perfectionist, like do a great job kind of person. So it was really taking its toll on me mentally. So I stayed home for like 2 to 3 weeks and didn't leave the house. I was in pajamas. I'm not really sure how many times I showered. And I decided that I was going to never work for anyone else again. And I'm a graphic facilitator and recorder as well. So I had this big canvas up in my house with all my markers out. And I drew out my vision of what I wanted my business and my company to look like. And I had, it was just, I decided I was never going to work for anybody again. And I was going to take the time to design what my life and business looked like, because up until that point, all of the opportunities in my community had sort of just fell in my lap, come to me, made sense. So I went with it. But I never really created an experience for myself or a lifestyle that I wanted for myself. And so that's how I kind of moved into entrepreneurship. Sister Biz came about because the business work that I was doing was largely around consulting and coaching. And I started getting a ton of Black women calling me, asking me to have coffee. And we'd sit down, have a cup of coffee or tea, and they tell me that they were going through the same thing in their 9 to 5 that I experienced, and that they needed help starting their business, or they'd left or got fired or pushed out, and they wanted help with how to make it work because they had a short runway and very little capital. And so I started getting so many, and those calls, those coffee meetings were so emotional. Like they would be crying by the end of the call, and it was just healing for me. At first, I was resistant. I was like, why are people making me relive what I went through? And then I realized that was God's way of helping me help others while healing myself, because I never really addressed it fully. And so I started to do that work and build a community of women, and it turned into Sister Biz.
How did you get there to that point where you were locked in your home 2 to 3 weeks to now people reaching out to you, kind of a little bit of a mentorship and to get your insight on things? Like, what happened in between there that people felt comfortable to come to you, or that you felt, built back up enough to now I can speak and pour into someone else?
I think when you free yourself and you start speaking, you realize how strong it makes you, and you begin to speak out more. And so when you might start off feeling ashamed when something like that happens to you in corporate America or in mainstream institutions, and so you may suppress it and run from it. That's what I did. I don't know if that's other people's experience, but that's what I did at first. I just said, just go. Do you and go, move to the next opportunity and never look back. And really what I was doing was not addressing the hurt, and it turned into an opportunity for me to speak out once I realized that other women were going through what I went through, that it was a real thing. Gaslighting is real, and really not knowing that you are not alone can stop you from really speaking out. So once women started coming to me, asking me to help, I started creating a space for us all to dialogue, for me to do MVP work and poll them and see what sorts of areas in your business do you need support in, as well as what sorts of areas in your own personal and emotional and mental development do you need to deal with in order to build this business? Because you're not starting from ground level. You're starting from below ground level with everything that's stacked against you, and now with the brokenness that you're bringing into this experience from corporate America. How can you begin to build, and what supports do you need? And so as I began to create that space for dialogue, women got closer, and I also was able to build programming.
And what type of feedback did you get when you were creating that dialogue and asking those questions? What were people, the most common thing that people were needing or asking for?
I think on the business kind of technical assistance side, a lot of us do not have our, we don't know where to start and we don't know how to get things in order, get our house in order in terms of a business. And I really want to talk about this because now that COVID-19 funding is out, it's really impacting us to not have our house in order, not have our paperwork in order, not really have done our work to build an infrastructure for our business. It's impacting us, but that's something that's huge, like really. Not having the back office support or understanding of how to build a back office for your business as a micro business or solopreneur is a big deal. The second thing is not having and understanding how to build a profitable model. So is the concept and the model even set up so that you can make a profit and not a baby profit, but a real profit? And then on the emotional side, like, are you conquering imposter syndrome and fear? Are you looking at all of the things that are emotionally standing in the way of you being able to sell and sell big? So those are probably the three biggest areas where I saw a lot of room for work.
And did you get a lot of pushback from people when you chose to only kind of focus on working with Black women with your
Every
nonprofit?
week, every week. So people had, my actual nonprofit legal name is Foundation for Black Entrepreneurship, and Sister Biz is under that. And so when I would approach funders, because I'm a nonprofit, when I would approach funders, a lot of people told me, like, you're not going to get money because the word Black is in your name. Why are you just targeting Black women? Why not women of color? Why are you just targeting Black women? What about all Black entrepreneurs? And it really was something that I was adamant about. I prayed on it and I made sure that I stood my ground. You can collect the data by race and gender, but then when I go to address the problems that are surfaced from the data by race or gender, that's a problem. It made no sense to me. And so I just decided to be unapologetic. And who would fund, and who would walk away. And I promise you, for an entire year, I always make sure I have at least one funder in my pipeline every week to meet with. And for an entire year, people closed the door in my face, and told me that I wouldn't get funded based on those things alone, along with other things they wanted me to change and do. But I know to stay in my lane, and I know what I'm good at. So, and I know what my customers and clients need because I'm intimately connected to them. I work with them every day. I poll and take surveys and run rapid improvement on everything I do. I'm directly connected to the needs of the customers. So when I sit in a room with a funder who has no clue about who my community is and what my skill sets are, I just decide to move forward and take it with a grain of salt.
I find it interesting because, it was, I think Fast Company stated that Black women is one of the fastest growing segment in entrepreneurship, as well as minority female entrepreneurs generating $422.5 billion in revenue. But then there's the other side of that. We're producing all of this, but what about the funding and access to capital? Why is there this kind of disconnect or gap? If we're showing that we're producing the funds, why can we not obtain access to capital more fairly and more equally?
Well, a couple of things. We're not really producing the revenues. That number is inclusive of all women of color. But if you look at Black women's revenue versus white women's revenue, there's a stark difference. There's a huge disparity, and it's directly connected to our lack of social and financial capital, and our inability to access capital. And so, along with other things that lack of access kind of triggers or is connected to as well. But I would definitely say that we're the fastest growing segment because we are also experiencing a mass exodus out of mainstream institutions where we've had enough. If you look at the report by the Kansas City Federal Bank Reserve, Dale Gines did that research project and report. It talks about how anecdotally in his focus groups, Black women often talked about how they started their business out of need, not opportunity, because they were either pushed out of corporate America or mainstream institutions, or they just had enough and didn't feel like it was the place for them, and it was taking its toll on them mentally and emotionally. And so I think that's why we're the fastest growing segment, or at least one reason why. And on top of the fact that we're being pushed out, and we're highly skilled. We are highly educated, one of the most educated populations in the country. We're often behind the scenes doing the work in these organizations. And so when we leave, we know what we're doing in terms of the craft of our, in terms of our craft and our skills. And so it's just about building our entrepreneurial skills and capacity to back the product or service that we're great at selling or great at creating.
And I know a lot of the work that you do with your fund and business kind of works on closing this gap with instruction, as well as like building this village and tribe for the women, and as well as funding. Like, you have so many different layers built into your business model. I love it. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm really trying to create an ecosystem, a little mini ecosystem for the women, because I know that if I do, if I offer you coaching, but you don't actually have done for you services and technical assistance to implement, you're not going to be able to implement just based on a workshop. And so I have to order the done for you services while you're building your learning curve and your capacity. And then I can offer you the technical assistance and the coaching, but then if you don't have the money to fuel your sales funnel that we've just built, then how are you going to then sell? And so it's really important that all the pieces are there to the puzzle if we're going to really help our entrepreneurs succeed. So the academy is all about training and coaching. The loan fund and now our emergency fund for COVID are all about getting capital to our businesses. And then we have the technical services and the business clinic, which is around helping women actually access accountants and marketing professionals and process and project managers that can help them get whip their shape their business into shape. And so all the pieces are there so that we can help them from start to finish.
And so, did you guys create a separate emergency fund, or did you just shift how you're currently, what you were currently doing with the fund that already existed? How did
Yeah,
that
so the
work?
loan fund is it's separate thing, and it is offering up to 50K in business loans to Black women entrepreneurs who go through our programming and are ready, are loan ready. The emergency fund is separate, and it's a grant. It's not a loan of $2,500 for women who have we prioritize women who are in brick and mortars, so they really have a lease or a rent that they have to cover during this time and were forced to shut down, or their traffic is significantly reduced as a result of quarantine or stay-at-home mandates. We prioritize women who have figured out that they can shift their hustle, if they just figure out how to build an online infrastructure to offer online services and they need help and support and capital for that. And then we also prioritize women who have employees. So we know that we're more likely to hire folks that look like us. And so if you have employees, you have more than just one or two families being impacted by your closing down. And so those are the sort of three main areas that we're prioritizing for emergency grants. And it's not something that's going to get people through several months, but it is something that can maybe help them right now in April and be a bridge to them getting other funding or getting or opening their doors again in May or June.
I love that. And it's just such a great alternative, especially with all of the funding being exhausted from the Paycheck Protection Program, you know, all of the small businesses that weren't able to procure the funds
Yeah.
from that. You know, it's great that you guys have that
Yeah, I'm rolling my
response.
eyes at that. That is so messy. And it's just
So
messy. And I'm
messy.
just so dis not surprised, but disappointed nonetheless. And really trying to figure out what we can do as a community to support our businesses and hold our businesses and bridge our businesses through this time, because clearly we can't count on the federal government to do that.
I think your program definitely is just very impactful with doing those things, especially making sure that the businesses are set up properly so that you set, you know, to keep the funding rolling in, as well as making sure that the finances are in order
Yeah,
too.
that's really important. I'm glad you said that because I've been thinking very, very passionately about this time and what it means for how we can offer services and training in our network for women around what I'm calling getting your house in order. And so I know that a lot of us didn't even apply for PPP and for the economic injury disaster loan because we're not sure if we're eligible. And in some cases we're not, because they need to do some design work there on that end. But not eligible and don't have your financials in order and maybe haven't done your taxes and don't necessarily have your paperwork in order. And so it leads into this larger discussion for me that, like, it's a wake up call for me that we need to start thinking about boot camps and workshops and coaching and training that specifically walks women through how to collect, file, organize your paperwork, everything from your W-9s to the receipts, to your mileage log, to your tax diary, to your financial statements, like just helping people, helping our women start from the very beginning in terms of getting their house organized in order so that when opportunities come, your paperwork is in order. Now, there may be systems. No, there are systems in our way, and racism is real, and discrimination is real, and systemic barriers are real. But what is also real is that, why are your taxes not done? Why are your financials not done? Why do you not take your receipts and have a digital system set up to record those receipts? Those are things that we, organizations like mine, can help our women with, so that that can be one less thing that's holding them back. A lot of our women can't even afford to apply for some of these opportunities because they don't have the money to pay an accountant to get their taxes or back taxes done and their financial statements drawn up. And they don't understand budgeting, cash flow strategy, and that sort of thing. And so those are some of the things that I'm actually fired up and ready to start doing some more targeted work in those areas around getting your paperwork and your finances and stuff in order.
It's necessary. It's just so many layers to entrepreneurship and owning a small business. And I think a lot of times the focus is on the branding, the look of it, the marketing, but that back end stuff, especially with the financials, I think that's way more important than kind of like the look. And I don't think that you can forget about that or put the marketing and the branding over that, because when opportunities like this come, that's like, right, we're not ready because we don't have that's these things in order. That's absolutely right.
And when you think about the things that those, what the, all the things you just named impact your ability to access capital, loans, investors are looking at you. They want to see your paperwork. You need to take out a bank loan. They want to see your paperwork. You want to access one of these COVID opportunities. They want to see your paperwork. You have to think about the fact that you can't really grow and scale without these things in order. And if you do have the opportunity, or your business is successful and you start to have a lot of traffic and a lot of customers and more employees and you're ready to grow and scale, and those things aren't in order, it only gets worse. And you can end up risking losing it all because your data, your numbers, your paperwork, your compliance is out of whack. And so it's really important to start while you're small with the habits and the routines of having operations and behind the scenes back office work done well.
And how do women become a part of your program? Is there like an application process?
What we have different programs. So for our programs that are of no cost, some examples of those are like our 4-week boot camp. So we're starting a sales funnel boot camp in May, and that's free. And we run those 4-week boot camps, biz boot camps throughout the year, and they're always free. The 9-month cohort, again, no cost to it, but there is an application process. It's highly selective. We choose 10 women and we take them through full business design and makeover and, you know, for 9 months. And then we have the larger network, we have a membership program of $19 a month, and members in that program get way more than that, you know, in terms of the ROI, because we have monthly masterclasses, we have business office hours, we have Black Girl Therapy sessions. And so we're just doing a lot. And we're now getting ready to launch our more collaborative structures, like our masterminds and our leads groups and our book clubs are starting in the next few weeks here with our new ambassador program. So those are some of the different ways people can get engaged.
Love that. And with all of this going on, have you been able to kind kind of take some moments of
Yeah, I
self-care?
used to run a day spa, so self-care has never really been a hard thing for me. However, I will admit that I have my peaks and my valleys in that regard. Like when I'm going through a busy season, it may be less than a not busy season, but every year I take the entire month of July off and go lay on a beach somewhere. And so that's the first thing that that was one of the things that came up on my board when I left. When I left my mainstream job and spent 3 weeks in a house and drew out what life I wanted, I was like, every year I'm taking July off, and every year I have. And then
I
just, you
love
know,
that.
in the mornings are mine, and Mondays are days that I don't interact with people. I just get my calendar in order, I get my meetings in order, I prepare for meetings, I prepare any content for the week, like, and so I have a lot of calendar rules that help me take care of myself.
Has there any been anything else from your vision board that you wrote up that you've seen kind of
I
come to
said I would
fruition?
always make over six figures after I left, and I did. I said that I wanted to work close to home so that I didn't have to commute a lot, and I do. That I wanted more time with my son, and that happened as well. I had a beautiful, end of his high school career with him before he went to college. All the time I was able to spend with him and things I was able to be at that prior to that I had missed a lot of, and felt bad about. So those are some of the things that happened. And then in terms of the impact that I have, like my dream is that has always been that Sister Biz isn't this thing where I'm the sage on stage, but I just create this space for women to be leaders and lead, our community in wealth building, and then support each other and collaborate with each other. And so the night that I dreamed about Sister, or that I dreamed up Sister Biz, it was another whiteboard night where, or graphic facilitation night on the canvas where at 9 p.m. the thought came to me about what Sister Biz would look like, the name, everything, the programs. I started just writing like crazy on the board, and at nine it started at 9 p.m. At 4 a.m. I looked up and I was still like writing like crazy. It was like insane. It was, I looked
Oh
kind
my
of mad, and
gosh.
all that stuff that I wrote on there, for the most part, most of that stuff has happened or is in progress.
That's beautiful. Did you save it
I
too?
did.
Well, I'm sure. Were you able to save it
I
and
did. I
everything? Do you
haven't looked
have
at
it
it in a
yet?
long time, though. But yeah, I have saved it.
Really? Oh my gosh. That's beautiful just to see that all manifest for you.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And so now I just want to take some time to find out a little bit more about who you are and the things that you love to do or use. So, what's a quote, verse, or mantra that keeps you encouraged?
I would say be unstoppable. That's my thing. Like, just don't stop. Just keep going no matter what. That's where the winners are. The winners just don't stop.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Black Bombshell Yogi. Black Bombshell Yogi was created to motivate and uplift women of color who are tuning into themselves daily and awakening to the true goddesses they are. This brand is dedicated to women who practice yoga, meditate, pray, give themselves love, and self-affirming rituals. You can find out more at blackbombshellyogi.com or Instagram at blackbombshellyogi. Now back to our episode. And what's a tool or app that helps you manage your life or work that you
Smart
couldn't live
sheet.
without?
I am a Gantt chart freak.
What book should every girl behind the hustle
Oh,
read?
E-Myth.
And what's your go-to song before a meeting or to
Why the
kick off your
Sister Biz
day?
theme song, of course.
And fill in the blank. My name is, and what you don't see behind the
My
hustle
name is
is.
Makeisha, and what you don't see behind the hustle is probably someone who really likes to have fun and is silly.
Thank you so much, Makisha, for being on the podcast today. Please let the listeners know how they can connect with you and find out more
I
about your
sure will.
programs.
They can go to www.sista.biz, and we're also on Instagram at Sista Biz, and you can join our private Facebook group on Facebook. It's called Sista Biz Global Network for Black Women in Business.
Love it. Thank you so much. I
Thank
truly
you for
appreciate your
having me.
time
This was
today.
very nice.
Thanks so much. much for listening to the podcast today. I would love to hear your takeaways from the episode. One key takeaway for me was that the importance of niching down. Sometimes niching down can be really scary and feeling as though you're leaving other people out, but it's just very important to know your target market. And even with Makisha facing pushback from investors wondering, what about all women? What about Black men and women? And just knowing your market, knowing that target market, and knowing what's necessary to fulfill their needs. So I would love to hear from you. Shoot an email over to heygirl@girlbehindthehustle.com. You can hit me up on Instagram or Facebook at Girl Behind the Hustle. Oh, y'all, I forgot to tell you, we're now on Twitter. So you can also find me there at Girl Behind the Hustle. I look forward to hearing from you. And as always, until we meet again, take care, hustle, and grace.